In survey after survey, people have named Who Let the Dogs Out as one of the most annoying songs of all time. In its day, the Baha Men song only reached number 40 on the Billboard charts. But the song's licensing to movies, karaoke dolls, and sports stadiums made it one of the most heavily marketed songs in history. No one could escape the outing of the dogs.
The catchy hook of Who Let the Dogs Out has a long history dating from an early 90s jam track that went on to become a radio bumper before it morphed into a Junkaroo dance song that was eventually covered by the Baha Men to become the radio hit everybody loves to hate.
What is Who Let the Dogs Out really all about? Our guest today is music enthusiast Ben Sisto, who fell down the rabbit hole and came out the other side with his multimedia presentation, Who Let the Dogs Out, which tells the amazing story of this one-hit wonder.
Listen as we talk about Steve Greenberg, the man behind many of the one-hit wonders of the day, all the lawsuits that followed, and what do musicians do when they grow weary of that one song that overwhelms their lives.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you have Feast of Fun in your ears because for the last 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. If you like the show, please make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. And if you didn't like the show, make a donation anyway to help us improve.
Hello.
Hi, is this Ben Sisto?
This is Ben Sisto.
Hey, this is Fausto Fernos.
And I'm Mark Fillion. Welcome to Feast of Fun. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So, who let the dogs out? It's probably a question you get asked a lot.
Yes. Usually when people ask me who let the dogs out, I tell them that the answer changes depending on the meaning of their question, which doesn't satisfy a lot of people. But, you know, there's different ways of looking at it, like where the song came from, who first recorded it, maybe who first covered it, who fought to get it played in stadiums. There's kind of like a variety of answers.
What are some of the quick answers for, like, if, you know, obviously the song, if you look at the lyrics, it's about men being disrespectful towards women in a party and sort of the women calling them dogs, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's an artist named Anselm Douglas, and he's a Soca Calypso artist, and he wrote the song as a way of combating, like, dance floor misogyny at Carnival. But where he got the hook from was these two radio jingle writers at WBLK in Buffalo, and they had been producing jingles to promote a live-to-air radio show they did out of this club called Industry. Mm-hmm. And Anselm Douglas's brother-in-law used to say the phrase, who let the dogs out, a lot. And he was friends with these jingle writers. So they started producing it. Douglas heard it and they kind of said, hey, can I use that as the hook for this song I'm writing?
So what was the original intent then for those guys that wrote that jingle? What were they trying to write a jingle for?
This show called Rec Shop Radio, which took place at Industry Nightclub in Toronto. And they were just trying to get people excited. It was just like a phrase to, I don't know, just like a chorus to play on the radio to like amp people up.
Oh, to get excited for it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a radio station bumper.
Yes.
At the time the song came out, was the phrase who let the dogs out being used colloquially in the Bahamas or in the Caribbean?
I couldn't really verify that. Yeah. Douglas, in a court case, you know, he signed an affidavit saying that he got the phrase. Well, he says these two guys, Patrick Stevenson and Leroy Williams, who were the radio jingle guys, he asserts that they were the original authors of the hook, which is the phrase plus dogs barking. And that would have been around like 96. So outside of that, there's no other claims about it being like a known phrase.
So you are the only person on the planet who knows more about this song than anybody else.
Yeah,
what was your journey into getting obsessed with Who Let the Dogs Out?
I think, well, it started in 2010. I was between jobs and I was kind of spending a lot of time just like online looking at jobs, friends, art projects, you know, clickbait stuff. And that was the 10-year anniversary of the song. So my memory is a little fuzzy, but I guess I probably was reading an article about the 10-year anniversary. Then I looked it up on Wikipedia, and I realized that one of the first sentences had a missing citation. There was a gentleman's last name not present. And I like Wikipedia and free culture type stuff, so I thought it would be a funny little thing to just fix this one citation. But what kind of happened was, when I tracked the individual down, he was really, really interesting. He used to be the hairdresser for Roxy Music and was heavily involved in, like, the UK punk scene.
What was this guy's name?
Keith Wainwright.
And according to the Wikipedia page, he was a hairdresser who also worked with Roxy Music. So it makes me wonder about his sexuality.
I mean, I don't know. When I met him in London, he was there with his partner, who was a woman, but I don't know what his orientation is.
And you didn't ask him?
I mean, well, everyone's queer, right? So,
but so Keith Wainwright, he's kind of this very instrumental figure in sort of bringing this idea from the Bahamas over to the United States and back to the Bahamas with the Bahamen.
Yeah, so he would go to Trinidad for Carnival, and when he was there, he heard Anselm Douglas's song being played around, and he liked it, but not like a lot. Like, he kind of thought it was a little annoying, but he would always buy these like bootleg tapes and stuff that, you know, street vendors were selling. So he actually bought a bootleg of it and brought the bootleg back to his salon and gave it to this guy named Jonathan King. Jonathan King was kind of like a UK hit producer, and he just kind of told him, listen, like, I thought the song was a little annoying, but I saw how people were reacting to it, so, like, why don't you take a listen? And Jonathan King did his own version of it, which didn't really do well, but as it turned out, King was friends with this other guy named Steve Greenberg, who was Bahamen's manager.
And Steve Greenberg, he's considered the late 90s king of one-hit wonders, former president of Columbia Records. He managed the Jonas Brothers, the Bahamen, of course, Hanson, and was responsible for their single Mbop, too.
Yeah, he definitely is one of these people who has an uncanny ability to just really identify like pop hooks and crossover. He's kind of just a musical encyclopedia anyway. When I first met him and started talking to him, I, you know, kind of based on the songs, thought he might just sort of be a pop guy, but he can talk very, very deeply and extensively about like Caribbean music and Junkanoo and all these kind of obscure formats. He just, the guy has quite a memory.
Now, you mentioned Junkanoo, and that's kind of what Bahamen, that's the genre that this is written in?
Yeah, it's like a Junkanoo pop Miami-based kind of crossover. Prior to being Bahamen, they were a band called High Voltage, and High Voltage was a bit more of like a Junkanoo. Like, Junkanoo is like a street carnival, and it's just kind of like the music that kind of goes along with the carnival celebration, like particular drum patterns and things like that.
Before we move forward, though, Steve Greenberg is a really interesting person, and I know I'm really glad you got to meet him, because he is somebody who's really thought a lot about why and how music goes viral. He came out with a book, How the Beatles Went Viral in 1964, and he really like used a lot of those ideas and was instrumental in making Who Let the Dogs Out become this cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, he's like dedicated to PR for sure. Like, when the song was just coming out, he was telling me there was this contest that Nickelodeon was running on the early web, and you know, before like cookies were really tracking you and stuff. So, you know, he's having everybody he knows in the office like vote for his song over, like, vote, refresh, to make sure that it's, like, getting there as, like, the number one spot, which earns it, like, actual airtime. He was responsible for reaching out to this guy named Fred Traub, who is, like, a pro sports marketing guy, and he basically told him, I want you to work this song to the stadiums like you would work it to radio stations. So he's kind of also, like, instrumental in the development of, like, jock jams and the kind of like music sports crossover landscape.
At the time period, Alex Rodriguez, which everybody remembers as A-Rod, got into a bidding war with other stadiums and sports teams to make Who Let the Dogs Out his anthem, to have exclusive rights to it.
Yeah, there was a catcher, Oliver, I'm blanking on his last name now, but he was a backup catcher for the Mariners, and it was originally his at-bat song. He had heard it from the Mariners' in-house music selector, this guy named Greg Green, but then A-Rod liked it and kind of co-opted it. And then from there, there was these versions like Who Let the Mets Out, Who Let the Cards Out, just all these. And I think the Baja Men, they ended up playing a couple of the stadiums. So it's like a really malleable song. You can kind of say like, who let the whatever you want out.
Who are the Baja Men and how do they come to, because their success with Who Let the Dogs Out in I think it was the year 2000, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Yep. What, that was a cover of an existing song of Fat Jack and His Pack of Pets in 1988.
Well, it was a cover of the Anselm Douglas song, okay. Fat Jack's version. So Fat Jack is Jonathan King, the person that Steve Greenberg was friends with, and Jonathan King brought this demo tape to him from Carnival. So yeah, it's a moniker, but they're kind of both like covers of the Anselm Douglas song.
So how did the Baja Men get to record this song?
They were one of these bands that was like doing well in Japan, and they were charting, and they had a bunch of albums and were popular back home, but they hadn't had like a US crossover pop hit yet. But Greenberg had really stuck it out with them for a bunch of years, and when he heard Who Let the Dogs Out, he brought it to them and said, I really think we should do this. But I think the band was originally a bit resistant to it. They didn't feel like it was totally in their style, but they were going through changes. One of their members had just left to become a backup singer with Lenny Kravitz. So they kind of did this thing where they had open trials back home and kind of said like, hey, like who's going to be the new public face of Baja Men? And that's where these three guys come in that you kind of see from the video and all the album art. Like the actual band was about, it's gone in different incarnations, but between like 6 and 9 people. So they had these trials, and some of them I think are related to original Baja Men, but Greenberg kind of like pieced it all together. He kind of said, these are the guys, this is the look, this is the song we're going to cover. And, yeah.
Is Greenberg kind of, in my mind, he's this kind of like cliche stereotype Hollywood music producer. He replaced the lead singer, Nehemiah Held, with his nephew, Omerit, in order to get a hunky, sexier, younger man in centering the band. Isn't that how it went, or?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics of like the names you just mentioned, but sure. I've met Steve like many, many times. I've been to his office a bunch and stuff. And I think I actually just think he's like a pretty smart dude and has kind of like his own idea of like, what he wants to do as like a creator and artist. And he's it's not like in this process he's like screwing people over or anything. In fact, most people I've talked to have told me that, these background stories about like Steve sending them like checks that he doesn't need to, just to say like extra thanks and stuff. So I think he's like a pretty honest dude. I don't get any of the Hollywood slime from him.
Well, not that he's manipulative or anything, but he's a very savvy person who's like, we need a hunky young man to sort of front the center.
Oh, yeah.
It's, MTV yeah. was still a very yeah, important I mean, marketing tool at the time.
Yeah. He understands the relationship between like music and visual culture, and he knows what sells and how to sell it.
So the Baja Men and Hanson were connected with their manager, Steve Greenberg, and both of them had these major one-hit wonder songs.
I'm not sure. I actually don't know anything about the Hanson story, unfortunately.
Because those boys are still touring. They're still performing that song. Like all these years later,
if it's paying the bills, why stop?
Did the Baja Men get sick of performing Who Let the Dogs Out? Did they just go like,
I can only imagine. Yes, but the only Baja Men I've ever talked to is Isaiah, who's one of the original members. Uh-huh. And Steve put me on the phone with him once. He was in the Bahamas, and I don't know, he sounded happy. He told me that Steve was the greatest thing that ever happened to him. He was thanking me for my support. I think that they have probably made enough money to be like living comfortable lives, and I think them and Anselm Douglas and anybody that has a pop hit, you probably go through, right, these like waves of like, this is so annoying and I can't talk about it again. Mm. But it must still be, I can't imagine that it ever stops being fun to be performing to a large group of people and seeing that it's like bringing them legitimate joy.
In our years of interviewing artists here on this podcast, one common theme that we've encountered is entertainers, whether they be musicians or actors, sometimes fall into commercial success that's so big for mm-hmm. one project that they feel like it defines them for the rest of their lives. And so sort of like Dr. Frankenstein and his monster, they kind of grow to be enemies or at odds with each other. And so like especially drag queens eventually grow to hate the creation that they're known for and, you know, go through great length to distance themselves before eventually embracing it once again. And I would imagine that these artists who have these one-hit wonders have a very similar experience.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the period of time post Who Let the Dogs Out where, you know, like a follow-up single comes out, but then maybe it's not doing so well. So you see a different version of the single repackaged with like a bonus version of Who Let the Dogs Out or something like that. And I'd be willing to bet, you know, like once you've set a bar at a certain height, you're also setting your setup for like self up for potential disappointment. But I don't know. They've made a lot of other music and a lot of the stuff they've done after. I haven't heard a lot of other albums, like later albums, where it sounds like they're struggling to like recapture that moment. I think they kind of like settled back into just the, like a little bit more of what they originally were. But yeah.
Who Let the Dogs Out wasn't a really big song in terms of the charts. It topped out at 40 to compare it to the one hit wonders of the same time period. Lou Bega's Mambo Number 5, little bit of Rita. That made it up to number 3. And of course the Macarena was 14 weeks at number 1 and was performed at the Democratic National Convention. And so you really can credit Steve Greenberg, who took this song, who had modest chart success, and made it so ubiquitous by putting in the Rugrats movie and all these sports stadiums. And
I also think there's some other things going on there too, right? The other songs that you just mentioned are not, they're not like first language English songs, right? So like in America, people don't respond as well to like other languages because of like whatever institutional racism and stuff. But the other thing is that like Who Let the Dogs Out, even like before the Baha Men version, before the Anselm Douglas version, it's always existed as this really like powerful meme, like this chorus and this hook. And I really feel that the song, like Baha Men's version of the song, it's more like a delivery mechanism for this hook. So like the hook, the song itself didn't chart super high because it's got like a terrible rap in it. And like the other parts of it are really forgettable, but it's like this combination of a hook and phrase that, you know, you can trace all the way back to like early Miami bass DJs that has kind of like, that's what's lasted.
Get back Scruffy, get back Fluffy, get back you flea infested mongrel is not exactly the most flowing words that come out of your mouth.
Yeah. And like the rap in the song, which I will not try to quote now, but it just, there's parts of it that just, I don't know, just doesn't really like make a lot of sense. And also, you know, the rap does this interesting thing where the Douglas version and prior songs that use the chorus were kind of like anti-misogyny, pro-women, but then the rap in the Baha Men song is kind of like unnecessarily misogynist. You know, it kind of has the tone of like, we're coming for you, ladies. But when you think about everything else about Baha Men and how the song is positioned in like Nickelodeon movies and stuff, it's a really strange pairing.
Well, do you think it's popular with the Nickelodeon crowd just because it's a song about dogs?
Yeah, 100%. I think people like dogs, people like barking, call and response is like huge across every genre of music. You know, Who Let the Dogs Out? It's like 5 words. They're all monosyllabic, so like kids at very young ages can say it. It's funny to watch like old people bark in response. Like it's just a very, very malleable hook.
Now, Rolling Stone in 2007 named it the number 3 most annoying song of all time.
That is true. And actually, I think Hanson is on that list too, because Steve has told me that like he he really wears it as a badge of honor that he's done two of the most annoying songs of all time.
Is it annoying because it's so ubiquitous, or are the songs inherently just frustrating to hear to begin with?
I think it's annoying because, like, I don't know, like, music critics need something to complain about. Like, whenever I see a list like that, it's just kind of like, I don't know, like, you don't really... People need to spend less time, like, trash-talking things and instead maybe, like, amplifying what they feel is actually good. Like I know it's, like, funny to be, like, these songs are annoying or whatever, but I've spent a lot of time with this song, and straight up, like, I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of, like, Baha Men in general. But if you break the song down in terms of, like, what makes a pop hook or what makes a pop song, like, structurally good, it's, like, I kind of think it's a factually good song.
Mark, when you first heard Mambo Number 5, you had a really strong reaction to that song.
I did?
Yeah, you said, I don't know where the song came from. I don't know if it's going to be a hit. I felt like it was going to be a huge hit because of how annoying it was. And maybe you were describing it as catchy or something, but it was very quirky. And certainly, like, the late 90s kind of gave you these one-hit wonders that had these very gimmicky hooks to them that we just don't have that in this modern day of multimedia and the internet and culture, where we're much more fragmented. These were like the last days where a song could reach this zeitgeist that everybody in the country was singing it and hearing it in ads and television and everything.
Certainly we consume music differently, yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I remember, like, when, like, Katy Perry Last Friday Night came out, like, everybody was singing that chorus. You know, I mean, I think the speed with which new media is delivered means that, you know, the lifespan of a pop hook is slightly reduced because there's just such a constant influx of content. Mm-hmm. But I think people still sing the hooks, or, like, they're, like, as memorable.
Speaking of memorable, you collect a lot of memorabilia around this song. Like, what do you have in your collection, and where do you store all this stuff?
I'm trying to get my brother to store it all in his garage, but we'll see what he says about that. I don't know. I got about like 300 items in like Tupperware Rubbermaid bins. Currently, I'm preparing to go on tour, so they're currently all over my living room.
Because you're taking some of them with you.
Yeah. I'm doing like a installation of the. I do this thing, which is the museum of who let the dogs out. And the title just keeps getting longer and longer. But I'm going to do that installation in Philadelphia and a couple of colleges. There's a lot of weird stuff in there, like promotional frisbees and stuffed animals that dance. And I've also got, maybe like 100-something records where I've been tracing back, not just like where Who Let the Dogs Out came from, but then also like where those songs get their sample sources from to kind of show this huge like pyramid of like all the pre-existing music that had to be there in order for Who Let the Dogs Out to show up.
Do you have like one of those fish that you hang on the wall and when you walk by it sings it?
No, you know what?
Do they not do that?
No, but it's funny you say that because I've definitely Googled that being like that has to exist.
Right. It seems like it would.
I haven't found it, but yeah, there are definitely things that I search for. And then as I'm, you know, typing it into Google, I'm like, dear God, like what am I looking for and how much is it going to cost?
Well, what's the weirdest thing? Like what's the weirdest thing you have in there?
You know, I got this thing not that long ago that I thought was very strange, which was like a kind of like it's like a device that like truckers, like long distance truckers, can get to interface with their horn system. So when they tug the rope, instead of doing like a truck honk, it blasts Who Let the Dogs Out. And I was just trying to picture like who. Like who sees that? Like, cause the number of people who like drive big rigs is finite. And then within that, there's a subset of people who like do this like truck hacking. And then within that, there's like maybe a person who really wants Who Let the Dogs Out. And I just couldn't believe it existed when I saw it.
Did you buy it?
Oh yeah. Right away.
Cause what you're talking about is those karaoke toys, that Big Mouth Billy Bass is really famous for taking songs like Take Me to the River by Al Green or Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin and hooking them onto the wall. And this, these you know, are a category unto themselves and very much a big part of popular culture. You don't really see it anymore. And I'm not sure if this it's a licensing issue or that record labels felt like that trivialized their catalog to some degree. But I'm surprised that, and I'm sure that there's a dog somewhere that when you squeeze its paw, it starts going, "Who let the dogs out?" You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have about 12 like stuffed animal dogs that do that. There's like there's a set of 5 that were put out by this company called. I'm forgetting the Pacific Innovations, and they were the only ones that are officially licensed. They're all wearing a t-shirt with like the band's photo on it. But then there's a bunch of other ones where you press the paw and it's "Who Let the Dogs Out," but like a little off key or in a slightly different voice. And I think those are all the instances where someone like got the rights to cover it, but not use the original.
Mm. To give people a sense of how big, because some of our audience is young and may not be familiar with this song, amazingly so. It was first initially used in 2000 by the movie Rugrats in Paris, but it also made appearances in the just in films alone: Rat Race, Bubble Boy, Men in Black 2, The Hangover, and on television series South Park, Melissa and Joey, and The Big Bang Theory.
I'm sure it was in television commercials too, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of bumpers for like Disney and stuff, because Disney had these movies like Snow Dogs and stuff like that, and or like what's that Tim Allen movie where he becomes a dog?
Oh,
the Shaggy Heaven, Dog. Heaven.
You know, I don't know, but I feel
the
like
Shaggy it, Dog is the name of the movie.
I feel it's like a remake, like it was in beer commercials classic. Or something too.
Yeah, and there's also like a lot of like I found a lot of like videos online of like things like Peanuts characters doing live performances at Six Flags to "Who Let the Dogs Out," and you know that's like when Snoopy shows up and stuff like that.
Can you talk a little bit about the group's appearance on The Simpsons? I'm reading here, and
they did. Yeah. They did an episode. I can't remember the name of the episode, but they did a cover
Large Marge. "Who Let the Milk Out?" And "Who Let Her Jugs Out?" And then in the 2005 episode, "Thank God It's Doomsday."
Oh, yeah. And "Thank God It's Doomsday," that's when they go to the mall to get haircuts. And there's like a "Who Wants a Haircut" song. And that actually is Baha Men who do the "Who Wants a Haircut." It's on The Simpsons album Testify.
Yeah, and a lot of the guys have been interviewed through the years, and they're just kind of have a very don't worry, be happy attitude about it. But I imagine that, you know, as entertainers wanting to sort of be known as musicians, there's no doubt some frustration to being reduced to just this one single moment in culture.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said before, you know, I've only spoken with Isaiah, and he seemed pretty cheerful. So I don't really know. And like you said, like in a lot of the interviews, you know, they'll be like, "Oh, I just tell people the drummer let them out" or whatever. Like, you know, they kind of just like dodge the question a little.
Because they never say this song's about men being sexist to women at parties. They never come out and say that, even though the lyrics are pretty explicit. And part of it is like, is it just Americans? Is it racism that we're just not wanting to understand what the black man is singing to us? Or,
well, you know, it's funny when something kind of related is there's a word that appears in the song, which I may pronounce wrong, but it's skettle or a skettle, that is in the original Anselm Douglas song, where he kind of says like, he's basically saying like people are calling women this word, and it gets translated into the Baha Men's, like the word is still there in the Baha Men version too, and it essentially translates to like slut or whore or something like that. And I've always thought it was a interesting like oversight that didn't get edited out, because maybe like a Western audience or whoever was working on the song just like didn't even notice or like bother, because that shows up in all these versions where it's licensed to children. And I always thought that was like maybe not like racism per se, but like a kind of like willingness to not actually dive deep and understand another culture.
Liberace was well known for popularizing the music from Trinidad. And in his tours, he would, I guess he would book a lot of these bands from Trinidad and have them opening for him, because he thought those kettle drums were very exotic. But for the Baha Men, a lot of the Junkaroo music is known for that metallic rhythm that Trinidad, you know, and a lot of Caribbean music mm-hmm. has, which is it's sort of recycling a lot of the steel drums that are just littering, you know, docks. Yep. And a lot of these musicians are turning them into musical instruments.
Yeah, and you definitely hear that on like some of the Baha Men stuff. I mean, less so on Who Let the Dogs Out, which is more like, I'd say, you know, it just has a straight up like pop and kind of like Miami bass influenced sound. And it's always been interesting to me that it has a kind of Miami bass sound, because the duo who my research kind of is suggesting actually came up with the hook were basically like teenagers who wanted to be like Two Live Crew. But Steve Greenberg and them had like zero idea that any of that existed. And when I played them the original stuff, they were like kind of shocked that it existed. And one of the other song's co-producers, I mean, he was joking, but he was kind of like, you know, are we going to get sued over this and stuff? So yeah, there's interesting weavings of genres going on.
And through the course, through their sort of exotic history of this song, it's, you know, it's gone through so many court battles, all of them settled out of court.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For undisclosed amounts, because everybody's sort of like claiming ownership of the song to some degree.
Yeah. I mean, like the two radio DJs we talked about a while ago, you know, they sued Douglas for claiming they wrote the hook, but they were kind of had this friends and family relationship prior to that. So I think they wanted to settle and just keep the peace. But then this other label, Wingspan Records, had put out a version called Who Let the Dogs Out, which predates Baha Men and features Anselm Douglas's voice as the sample. And they got into a bunch of legal disputes, too, with Destined Songs, who is distributing the Baha Men version, as to whether or not, like, you know, basically, like, who had the rights to build off the Anselm Douglas version anyway. They all settled out of court. You know, I think there's a point where, like, when there's so much money involved and so all the licensing and points and all that stuff, it's a better deal for people to just find an agreement and settle than to risk having the court just, you know, totally side with one party.
Mr. T said in several interviews, and this is very interesting, when you're a successful black entertainer, you're not just making money for yourself, you're making money for your whole family. And I'm curious, like, how successful, considering the commercial success of the song, a lot of these entertainers involved with the Baha Men must have been set for life, or did they have to share that wealth with so many people in their family and in their team and industry? Like, how comfortable are they today?
Well, I don't know how many people are in their families or how they've chosen to sort of redistribute their resources to, like, you know, different people, charities, boats. Like, I'm not really sure what they've done with the money.
Like, yeah, are any sure. of them, like, working, like, desk jobs somewhere or, like, you know?
I actually don't know. You know, it's funny because, like, so Baha Men, like, in all of my research, they're essentially, like, a cover band, and they're a cover band that, like, made this song really, really popular. But like the bulk of what I've focused on is like the stuff that's kind of pre Baha Men and pre Anselm Douglas. Sure. So I know a lot about like those stories, but Baha Men are just kind of like, actually just this morning, like, or a few days ago, I hit up Anselm Douglas on Facebook and I was like, hey, like, I've been doing this research for 7 years, but I've never talked to you. Like, maybe we should chat. And he just got back to me today. And it's more like, at this point, I just feel like it's almost like an obligation or I don't know, it would be rude to not talk to him. But the way the court cases break down and all that stuff, they're, it's just not where like the central attention of the story is, I guess. Mm.
Mm. Does your friends and family think you've lost your mind?
I have a very understanding partner, and she's probably heard yeah. this song more times than anybody except me. Actually, my dad is going to come on tour with me, which is a funny thing. He just retired and saw the dates I was doing and was like, hey, I'm going to get in the van. So I think they, I think they understand that it's like it's about like intellectual property law, and I do take it kind of seriously. But that I, you know, I'm not like a crazy person. I guess only crazy people say that, right? But
if you don't say you're crazy, you are crazy.
Yeah, but like when I've done installations, like, or sometimes in interviews, people are like, "You're a man obsessed." And I'm like, no, I'm a normal guy. Like, I work, you know, 60 hours a week. I've got a very, like, normal kind of job. But, yeah, I'm sure at first they were probably like, what is this guy talking about?
Would you like the song?
I'm indifferent.
Oh, my God.
What do you mean monster? You're
Why would you, why would you do so would, much yeah. work on if you don't?
Why would you dedicate it? Yeah, you know, what's going on?
Well, I think that what's going on with the song is that the hook was written by these two teenagers in Florida in the early 90s who have never been given credit, never got money, probably are never going to get money. And it's more a thing where I'd like to see them or whoever the original authors of the song are kind of get, I don't know, just like get their accolades, I guess. And also in doing so. And I promise I didn't set out to do this to like mess anyone's like payday up or anything. But if my research is right, I think that anybody in the world is legally allowed to write a song with that chorus. Like it's essentially public domain. It's not public domain, but like you could write a song with that chorus and like Baha Men or Ansem Douglas, like they have no legal recourse to come after you. So like in a way I'm freeing up a piece of pop culture to enter the public domain in advance of its like normal 75 years plus you know life kind of thing.
So you're telling me that through all this and like the jingle and the bumper for the radio station and all that stuff, the original people were just some kids from Florida that wrote the song and they never got a penny?
Yeah, there's this duo, Miami Boom Productions, and in the early mid 90s, like I'm gonna say 93, they did this they started this project called The Two. And so their story is that they were like driving around and they were listening to this CD by a group called Bass Patrol. They're like a Miami bass group. And on Bass Patrol's song, which was called De Mad Scientist, there was a sample buried, like kind of like low in the mix. And it was a sample of a song called Pump Up the Party by Hassan. So the way that song goes, it goes, "Who's rocking this dog's house?" And then there's some barks after it. But it was so low in the mix, they couldn't really understand what it was saying. And as they're working on their demo, they were like, they were just kind of like goofing around and like making up lyrics over it. And at one point, one of them said, "Who let the dogs out?" And they were like, "Oh, like that's going to be our third track," because it's like Miami bass and like, I don't know, like Miami bass is built on like George Clinton and like, it's just, you know, it's the era of Arsenio. There's like dogs everywhere. So they have, all this like original material, like notebook papers with like where it says "Who let the dogs out" on it. And I got them to like dig deep in the archives and they found these two floppy disks that were their original like, keyboard sampler disks. So I had them opened up by this digital forensics lab in London. and like, yes, that usually I say that and people laugh and I do realize it's where the story gets a little psycho, but the lab was able to verify like what type of keyboard they were used on. And then a friend of mine happens to have this kind of like rare sampler. And a couple of months ago, I went over his house. We put these original floppies in, hit the button, and it was their vocal sample. So I am in possession of like hard physical evidence that's like time stamped that they did this in 1993, which is, you know, like 7 years before the Baha Men song.
You've got the time stamps. So now you're touring the country. You're going to places. You're going to come here to Chicago. You're going to be the Ace Hotel and you're giving it's a live event. And you get up and you talk about this song.
Yeah, it's like I have about an hour long presentation. It's like a slideshow with like where I play back different media samples and let people kind of like hear side by side. I talk a little bit about different aspects of copyright law, like why they matter, not just to this case, but to like all sort of like potential infringement cases. I'd talk a little bit more in depth about like some of the people and their personalities and that kind of stuff. And then there's usually like a Q&A where people just keep asking me the question why over and over again.
But please tell me the names of these two young men from Miami who were instrumental in making this happen.
Joe Gonzalez and Brett Hammack.
So Joe and Brett. Have you, and you're friends with Steve Greenberg.
Yep.
Why could Steve like work with them or help their careers in some way?
Or where are they now even?
Yeah.
Well, so Brett lives in Florida. Well, so as it happened, I met Joe very easily because he used to DJ a disco party or like a freestyle disco party in New York. And his co-DJ for some of those was a guy that I used to throw parties with in Boston. So I was kind of like, I just found him very easily, and we ended up like, you know, he's cool. Like we ended up talking a bunch, and I've had him DJ a few events. When I did this museum installation back in the spring, I had Brett flown up from Florida, and I had these two guys like DJ the after party for this big art fair. So they're like up on the balcony playing Who Let the Dogs Out, and all these like young art kids are like dancing and stuff. So they're like, they're cool. They're like normal people. I think Brett has kind of like moved on a little bit. Like he's just kind of like, hey, like we got screwed on that. Like, you know, no one ever believed me and it hurts a little, but what are you going to do? I think Joe is
Steve
a bit
could
more
send
like
him a fruit basket at least.
Well, yeah, but you don't want to admit to anything because then you have to pay him.
Well, the other thing though is Steve's like not in the wrong, right? Because sort of what happened is Baha Men cover Anselm Douglas. Anselm Douglas signs this affidavit in court that these two radio jingle guys wrote it. And the radio jingle guys are basically like, yeah, we wrote it. It was just like, it was sort of like a popular phrase. And between the time that their jingle happened and the Miami Boom Productions thing happened, there's actually another track. Do you guys remember the song Short Dick Man?
What? Oh, yeah, it's in my ringtone.
What?
I'm just kidding. What is that?
Oh, Short Dick Man was like a huge like mid-90s hit. It was this artist named Gillette. And it goes like, don't want no short dick, man. You would know it if you heard it. I guarantee it. But anyway, this song was like,
just Google it. Mark, you mute that? Okay.
Yeah, that's sorry. It.
Well, hit the mute button. We don't have the rights.
We're talking about it. Short Dick Man.
Twenty fingers.
Massive hit. Like huge hit.
Yeah.
And a follow up single to that was this song called You're a Dog. And the chorus in You're a Dog is just something else. But there's like a refrain at about like a minute and 30 something seconds into it. The singer says, who let them dogs loose? And it's followed by barking sounds. And a big thing that I claim, and this is really like, this is me kind of like putting a carrot on the stick or whatever, because I don't have hard evidence of this, but the song was so, her original hit was so big. And You're a Dog, although it flopped, it did get like a review in Billboard. It definitely was like pressed on like many different formats all over the place. I've always kind of suspected that these two radio jingle guys, if they're writing a radio jingle in 1996, they're probably, and it's a radio jingle for a club in Toronto, and Gillette is originally also from the Chicago area and has these huge hits. I just find it like hard to believe that they would not have been aware of this follow-up hit. The thing is, it's possible that like maybe their friend was aware of it and he was saying the chant and they didn't, you know, not all instances of infringement are malicious. You know, you can have like accidental. So what's really difficult is to try to draw a line between Miami Boom Productions, Gillette, and these radio jingle writers. That's where things are murky because it's like, it's the 90s. People are just passing around demo tapes and stuff. Like the internet's not there to offer like lasting sort of like metadata backup or anything like that. So that it's kind of like a mystery, but I try to like, tell a bit of a story that makes sense through all that.
Well, you're familiar with the concept of cryptomnesia, which is when you hear something, but you're not consciously realizing that it's making its way into your creative work.
Yeah, totally. And there's also like courts will recognize like independent simultaneous creation of like novel, you know, arrangements. I mean, there's a finite number of musics. There's a finite number of like you know, pixels on a screen or whatever. So it's possible that you and me have never met each other, never heard each other's work, and both write something that is very similar to Who Let the Dogs Out. Mm.
Yeah, at the same time, you know, I mean, we observed for this past, you know, 2 decades doing this kind of work, that a lot of stuff does get just, you know, blatantly stolen by yep. the rich and powerful. And it's really up to the ability to defend yourself in a court of law and to be able to prosecute it
in order to be able to
make things fair.
That's the joke about copyright, is that it's the right to get, you know, it's like the right to have all of your savings like destroyed in litigation.
And, you know, I had this teacher one time tell me this, that anthropology is the science of speculation and making arguments. And, mm-hmm. you know, in this case, musical anthropology, you're presenting an argument, you're putting this information out there, and other people are more than welcome to present other arguments. It's not like
totally.
your perspective, your opinion on this is the yep. definitive voice.
Well, I try to be pretty clear, too, that, like, over the course of researching this, things have happened. Like, I have friendly relationships with Brett and Joe. I have a friendly relationship with Steve Greenberg. The people who were involved with Wingspan Records, I wouldn't say I have an unfriendly relationship with them, but like their former lawyer did ask me a bunch of questions on the phone, like, who are you working for? What are you trying to do here? They were a bit more accusatory, mm-hmm. but like, so I'm just like a person, you know, and I've got like, I'm not a professional journalist, and I've been trying to steer clear of like directing the story towards any particular way. But yeah, like you said, I'm kind of just saying, this is the story that I know, and I'm sure that there's one or two people out there. There's like two little connections or facts that I'm missing to tie it all together. And those folks either don't know I'm looking for them, don't want to talk to me, or have just forgotten because it's, you know, 20 years ago.
Mm.
Do you see this kind of work as a form of art, that research is the medium here?
Yeah, I don't really, I like projects, and I don't really have like a hard line between like doing a presentation, doing research, you know, when I did the installation of the museum back at this fair, and that one of my favorite moments was a guy walked in the room and he looked around at 300 pieces of, you know, stuff. And he just said to me, "But are you an artist also?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, man." I was like, "We're at an art fair and this is like a room full of stuff." And he was just like, "Yeah, but like, where's like your paintings and stuff?" And I had this like,
yeah. We have this idea that art has to be traditional media, but art ultimately is an idea.
Yeah, totally. And like, you know, people have no problem looking at like a Renaissance painting and saying that's art, even though that's actually like a proto photograph that was commissioned to like uphold the, I don't know, status of wealthy people. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, so like, I would argue that is less, not that it's like less art, but yeah, I'm more drawn to kind of like things that are, I don't know, like about concepts and ideas and whatever. I mean, I could start making Who Let the Dogs Out paintings tomorrow. You know, I don't know.
They could be playing poker out in the fields.
Yes. But I think this is an important thing to put out there, because a lot of people sort of try to dismiss creative works or enterprises by individuals by saying this is or isn't art. Even though really, mm-hmm. really what we need to be talking about is this something that we connect with? Do we feel that it's any good or effective at its mission or goal?
Yeah, usually when people say something is or isn't art, what they're really talking about is how neatly it fits into like a pre-existing market, you know, and yeah. In a lot of ways, the art market, like the capital A big money art market, is essentially like, I don't know, a way for wealthy people to hedge against the death tax by like diverting resources around. So it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like the, I don't know, all of human activity, it can be art if that's what, if you, like, who is it, Richard Avedon, you know, says like, anything is art if you approach it with the intention or skill and care of art. So I think it has more to do with like intention and honesty than what it looks like or sounds like.
That's a beautiful way of putting it.
Thanks.
Ben, thank you for sharing this amazing story with us. I'm dying to see your presentation.
Oh, you guys are going to come?
I'll try to make it. It's you're at the Ace Hotel here in Chicago on November 2nd, right?
Yeah, 7 o'clock and it's free.
Awesome.
And the Ace Hotel is kind of a hotel chain that sort of specializes in popular culture and music. And it's more than just a hotel. It's also, I've actually stayed in the one in Chelsea in New York.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that is where I work.
You actually work there?
Yeah, I oversee the public programs and art programs for Ace in New York.
So you booked yourself at your own job.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that. Yeah, I can call in a favor.
That's great. You know, it's like, yeah. It really what you're doing is right up our alley. We did a podcast called More Than Just a Gigolo that traces the history of the song Just a Gigolo from World War One.
From post-World War One in Austria.
David Lee Roth and you know, Louis Vega and Louis Prima. Mm-hmm. And just all these different variations of the song that ultimately is about somebody who is not happy with their job and feels like their life has been spent.
Even though they have a fabulous life beforehand, but they're only going to be known for doing this one thing. Like you, you're probably just going to be known as the who let the dogs out guy. Even though, you know, you have a partner, you have a family, you have a life, you've got a job, but they'll always know you for this one thing. I'll send you a link to the podcast and so you can take a listen to it. I think you might enjoy it.
And the cool. most critical thing about Just a Gigolo is that Bing Crosby in 1931, he was a very successful recording artist and radio personality, and he was making these films, right? And he was a pioneer in developing all this technology just because he didn't like to go live on the radio.
Right? You know, so, I can tell you where Bing Crosby actually factors into my story too, because when I've traced all of these songs, like kind of like all aspects, origins of phrases and stuff, I believe that it's Bing Crosby who's one of the first people to sing a version of like a yippee-yo kaye in a song. And, you know, and then that gets like goes through different iterations over time. And you end up with like the Baha Men saying their yippee-yos, which maybe for them are like more influenced by like George Clinton or something like that. But yeah, there's so many of these threads that you can really trace back to like the origins of recorded media. So that kind of indicates that they also, you know, exist for a substantial amount of time before that, just undocumented.
Mm. Well, and it really was Bing Crosby, who was a film star and, you know, making also exist a living on radio, who was just like, why can't we do for radio what we're doing with these movies and record all this stuff ahead of time and just broadcast it instead of having to do it live, which is very nerve-wracking and uncomfortable. And you know, we would not be where we are today in terms of music, in terms of digital media, if it wasn't for the money that Bing Crosby and the time and care he did back in the 1930s to develop microphones and mixers and you know, all this stuff was analog. And he is at the center of it all.
It's crazy when there are these like these soul inventors. Like, have you guys ever researched like Grandmaster Flash a lot? And like, you know how like his inventing of turntable scratching systems?
No, I only saw it on that Netflix special. I was just like, that's how they do it.
Well, what's crazy is like
the Get Down. Yeah,
he was doing stuff like you know, going into like dumpsters and like looking for capacitors and resistors and stuff to like, you know, build his own mixer. And then, like, modify it to do, like, crossfading. It wasn't, like, a thing where he bought this tool and was like, I'm going to use this in a new way. He, like, invented the thing and then used it in a new way. You know, it's just, like, mind-blowing.
Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I really love your work. And, you know, it certainly could do a whole podcast with music anthropology in this way, because it's really it's a great approach to talking about culture in a very novel way, sort of giving us the history of these songs that we may not necessarily be aware of.
Well, I appreciate you guys talking to me. It's been a lot of fun.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye, I'll see you.
Bye-bye. Ben Sisto lives in Brooklyn, New York. Who let the dogs out, a multimedia presentation on the origins of the phrase "Who let the dogs out," made popular in the year 2000 by the same song of the Baha Men, is coming to the Ace Hotel here in Chicago.
You can see him on November 2nd at 7 o'clock. It is free and open to the public. Check out the Ace Hotel and RSVP to the program, because I'm sure a lot of dogs will show up for that one.
Who Who let the owls out?
There you go. You have your parody song 17 years later. I've been doing later. That
for 17 years already. We're going to do a special thanks to Jorge Cruz, and Rachel Kane of Trax Records for setting us up with Ben Sisto. If you know of somebody who's as interesting as Ben and has a compelling story to tell, please set us up. Yeah. Send us a mail@feastoffun.com.
I love it when former guests of the podcast recommend somebody to the program, because it's like they've had a good experience. They know what to expect and they know what we're looking for. And, it usually works out. It doesn't always work out, but it usually works out.
I want to thank you guys all so much for listening. Remember, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support. We can't do these kind of magical, in-depth, one-of-a-kind programs without you. Go to feastoffun.com/plus, and where you can listen more than just a gigolo as we walk you through the history of that extraordinary song, all the way from after World War I to the present day, from the Village People to David Lee Roth, Marlene Dietrich, David Bowie, Peter Allen, all kinds of characters and personalities, Louis Prima, Bing Crosby, putting their hands on this magical song as it evolves almost through 100 years.
All about a male sex worker.
Yes. And we have lots and lots of amazing episodes. Incredibly strange Christmas music. I think we've been doing this now for 8 years, where we take a look at really weird, extraordinary Christmas songs that you may not be familiar with, but deserve a second look.
And we're always looking for new songs to feature. So if you've heard of something, send it our way. We may have played it before, but it does, some things bear repeating, that's for sure. I want to remind people, too, that a great way to support Feast of Fun is to shop at our store, feastoffun.com/store, and get yourself a t-shirt. You'll look fabulous in it. And if you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can do that at feastoffun.com/donate.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.